This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 21st, episode 1087, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Well, howdy, everybody. Thank you for joining us here at Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you being here. Now, Jamie, I got to tell you, you posted a picture last night on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning, and it was of sunset in Phoenix, Arizona, and it looked like, I thought you photoshopped it. I asked you before the show if you photoshopped it. It looked like the world was coming to an end or something. I thought that was the coolest picture.
It was the most amazing sunset. I was out teaching a lesson, and the sun started to go down, and the little girl that was riding Joey, who's in the picture, she was like, oh, my gosh, look. And the sky was, like, beautiful and yellow, and, you know, there's some clouds, and we don't usually have clouds, so it makes for really awesome sunsets because it's so flat here. And so it had clouds. 2 minutes later, she's like, look now. And then it was like a little bit of red. And then a few minutes later, it just kept changing and changing and changing until this happened. And it's not photoshopped. I took that picture with my iPhone and didn't adjust it at all. And it was just a really cool moment. And so I posted it. And then I started looking through the Facebook news feed on my thing. And every single person that I know that lives in Arizona posted a picture of the sunset last night, because it's something we don't see very often. There's usually not clouds. So it was so spectacular. It was really awesome.
I don't think anybody sees that particular sunset very often with the blues and the reds and the oranges together there like that. Wow.
It was pretty. It was pretty amazing.
And you didn't have a storm or anything, right? That was just the clouds.
Just some clouds. And again, it's so flat here that when you do have some clouds, it gets reflected really well. But I guess, I mean, I've never seen anything like that before. And the fact that Joey stood nice in it, well, to be honest, to get Joey to stand like that he was in the picture, I was throwing sand, you know, out to, like, get his ears pricked. So I did have to work a little bit at it.
That was a great picture with Joey's silhouette there. It was a great picture. Yeah,
It was really awesome. It was beautiful.
You do get some unusual things living in the desert there. I mean, between the haboobs and your skies occasionally, you do get some unusual weather events.
Haboobs and yeah, like it's the sky, and I'm trying to think of what other unusual weather events.
Have you had locusts? Have you had the attack of the locusts yet, or anything like that? No.
No. But
your water hasn't turned to blood, or
killer bee swarms every now and then, actually. You'll hear a traffic report. And the intersection of so-and-so and so-and-so is closed due to a bee swarm. So weird.
I had that happen on a golf course one day. We were out, and, you know, me, it takes me 45, it took me 45 more strokes than everybody else to actually get to the green. So I'm out in the fairway, and all of a sudden I hear this rumbling, and I thought, what the hell is that? It's like an airplane or something. I look up, and there's this first swarm of bees I'd ever seen in my life that was actually a large swarm, and it was right over my head. I ran, got in that golf course, and I didn't even play. I just threw my ball onto the green. I didn't even hit that shot. I mean, they were out there, and they just flew around in the swarm around that particular fairway. It's like, okay, anybody else wants to come through there, good luck.
You're like, I'll take a penalty stroke. I'm dropping.
The first time I'd ever seen a true big swarm like that. They're kind of scary when they're swarming like that.
That's amazing. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. It's terrifying. So, yeah, there is some interesting stuff that happens here in the desert for sure. I have not seen the stampede of scorpions or anything like I think I was expecting when I moved here. But anything could happen. Still young.
Jennifer, what are we doing on today's show? Because we'd like to know, too.
Back on track. Products Wednesday edition. The Velvet Voice of Horse and Country TV, Victoria Spicer, spices up the show first thing. And next up, Dr. Venable from Southern Illinois University tells us how she's looking deep into the causes of colic. Literally. So this is a ew moment, people. Warning ahead of time. And taking up the negative space throughout the show. Horse headlines whizzing past in every direction. Kind of like the pickup trucks at the Rolex parking lot 17 minutes after the final show jumping around. And stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Ew!
I'm just getting ready. I'm just
getting
tired
of that.
You are going to do that segment. I am not. I am not doing the we're going to cut horses open and check out colic stuff. That's going to be yours, I think. I'll be out.
Bring it on.
Paddocks. Okay.
Bring it on.
I'll go out and pet my pony or something. All right. What are we doing next? Bailey Winnie. My Daily Winnie, I want to thank some new auditors that have come on here this month. We have Larry. Notice something when I read these names. Jamie, see if you notice what I noticed. Larry, Pat, Lindsay, and Mark.
Larry, Pat, Lindsay, and Mark. What am I supposed to notice about these names?
Two guys. There's two guys in there. I know. We have more male auditors. We don't have a lot of male anything on the Horse Radio Network. So I'm always happy when we see guys chiming in. Yes, they. If you're not sure or if you're a new listener and don't know what auditors are, they're people that listen to the show and really like them and see some value in what they hear, and they head on over to our website and click on the big banner in the middle of the page at horsesinthemorning.com. And for as little as a dollar a month, they can become an auditor of the Horse Radio Network. And lots of benefits to that. They get to hear the blooper reels. They're the only ones that get to hear the blooper reels from all the different shows. We put those out periodically. They also get to review the books that we get in from publishers. We get publisher books in all the time. As a matter of fact, I sent out an email yesterday to the auditors, and I had 25 responses in like 10 minutes wanting to review books. So that's been pretty popular. Also, any products that we get in that we can't review, we send them out. So there's a lot of different advantages to being an auditor, as well as half the money that comes in gets divided up among the hosts here, the full-time hosts on the Horse Radio Network. So they benefit from it as well. Just a little extra way to help support the network and the shows that you like. So thank you to all of those new people. We really appreciate it.
Well, mine is one of these. Happy birthday, Tessa. Wait, she might not be listening right now because Tessa just had her 50th birthday, Glenn. 50th birthday. Who is Tessa, you ask? Tessa is a donkey that lives at the British Sanctuary, the Donkey Sanctuary. You know, we've talked a lot about the Donkey Sanctuary before. It's a charity that took Tessa in 1985. She's been living there for 30 years. And I guess the average British donkey life expectancy is 27. So she's outlived pretty much every donkey she came in with, and is 50 years old. She was born in 1965. She has a healthy appetite and loves being groomed. I'm waiting for them to like say, and she works out every morning and does sit-ups. And, you know.
So I was
never
waiting for, and she smoked the entire time, and she drinks a bottle of whiskey every day.
She feels like secret to longevity is a glass of vodka every evening. Yes. And
that's right. And 2 packs a day.
Yeah, smokes 2 packs a day and is running circles around everybody. No, just kidding. She is a beautiful, beautiful donkey that lives at the Donkey Sanctuary. And if you want to find out more, I can post a story, but pretty much that's it. They have 6,200 rescued donkeys there. That's a lot of
100?
You know, 6,200.
At the same time?
Donkeys.
Oh, they rescued or rehomed that many, maybe?
They have 6,000. Okay, it says Tessa is one of 6,200 rescued or rehomed donkeys currently in the care of the Donkey Sanctuary.
Wow.
Okay.
No.
Just so you know, that's like we have a donkey that lives probably 10 houses down, and then there's a donkey that lives 10 houses the other way. And right about feeding time, donkey on the south side of us starts braying like crazy, and then donkey on the north side of us starts answering. So they like talk back and forth and back and forth. That's two, and it is deafening. Can you imagine what 6,200 donkeys sound like? Holy cow!
I know, we have the same thing. We have on three sides of us, we have donkeys, and there's like two, two, and two. And they do that twice a day. They go into their braying fits, and you're right, it is loud. If you're right beside them, it's incredibly loud. Oh,
yeah.
They hit a pitch. They said they had one there that lived to the age of 56. That's old.
Yeah.
That's older than I am, even, Jamie.
I just think that if you want to donate earplugs to Donkey Sanctuary employees, you certainly can. As again, you can find them at the Donkey Sanctuary. Bless her little heart. Happy birthday, Tessa.
Well, happy birthday, Tessa. That's great. We're going to be getting to guests almost right away here today. But I have you seen the pictures, and it's been making the way around Facebook, from St. Anthony's Day in Spain. I don't know. I think something tells me we talked about this years ago. Have you seen the pictures going around about that? I have a link in the show notes down there. Jennifer can post it.
I saw the one you posted, and it doesn't look real.
Go to the link down in the that I posted in the show notes, and you're going to see that it's real. What it is, it's a town west of Madrid. It's San Bartum. I don't know. You could probably say it better than me. You're the Spanish expert. But they do, at this little town west of Madrid, they do this ritual every year, and it's for St. Anthony the Abbot, the patron saint of domestic animals. Now, why the patron saint of domestic animals would want them to do this particular thing is beyond me. But what they do... No. What they do is, these are narrow cobblestone streets. You were to Spain. You've seen that little towns, right, where the streets are about 10 feet wide.
Yep.
And what they do is they start bonfires in the streets all through the town. And this festival that dates back 500 years, hundreds of horses are ridden through the bonfires through town. They gallop through the bonfires through town, and they say that this helps purify and protect the horses for years to come. Do you think that's because they've developed so much scarring from being burned that they're protected? Did you look at the pictures? They're just out of this world.
Okay, so it's San Bartolome de Paneras is the city, and I could say it a little more Spanish, but that's the white girl way of saying it. And that is insane. It's on the eve of St. Anthony's Day, hundreds ride their horses through the narrow streets as part of the Las Luminarias Festival, which dates back 500 years. They've been doing this for 500 years, so they must, maybe the horses are really living long. I love the fact that they have...
horses died as a result.
And of course, they're all beautiful Andalusians, of course, and Andalusians are the ones. But this is like, it looks like the city is on fire. And the other thing I noticed, Glenn, is as these people are riding through and they're going, ole, and their arms are in the air and these horses are looking like petrified, they're also swigging from bottles. So machismo and alcohol always go together,
By the way, none of these Andalusians have any feathers left at the end of the ride, that's for sure.
No.
And we're not talking little tiny fire. We're talking there's some of these pictures where you can barely see the horse coming out of the flames.
Crazy Spaniards. Crazy Spaniards. Loco. Loco Espaniards.
Yeah, definitely crazy. Post that link because that's just bizarre. Just bizarre. I don't know how there's not any injuries in that. And, of course, Pete is not over there protesting that.
You know what? I've got to tell you, too, speaking of Andalusians, I am sadly somehow linked up with some Andalusian group on Facebook, and every time I look at Facebook, there's Andalusian horses for sale. And, you know, I was telling Chad last night, I'm like, their prices have really dropped. The euro is not as in good shape as it used to be, and I think now is the time to buy. They're like high school schoolmasters for 15,000 euros, and I think that's about $20,000. We could do that. Come on. I'll sell the truck.
Well, you know, I'm sure you got a positive response to that. I'm sure that he booked the tickets to Spain like tomorrow, didn't he?
You know, I really don't recall him responding. I think he changed the subject. So really, I probably should revisit that today. You know what? He did change the subject. He probably said something like, you know what? You look so pretty. And I was like, oh, my God. Thank you so much. Like, that's how, man, if you want to change the subject, just compliment your wife.
Well, I found this. It's been making its way around Facebook, Jamie, and there's two lists that have been making their way around Facebook, and they're both written by the same woman. Her name is Maria Wachter, W-A-C-H-T-E-R, Wachter, and she is of BlackmanRanch.com is where you can find her website, and she actually has mules. And she's out in California, and I talked to her by Facebook yesterday just to compliment her, and we chatted for a little while. I tried to get her on the show, but she works late shift, and she would not be able to make it at this hour in California. So, but I wanted to talk to you about this. It was on Horse Collaborative, and she wrote these two articles, and one of them was the 10 different types of horse owners. And, boy, having had a boarding stable, I just know all of these. So we'll see how many of these you've run into. And I actually think that all of us have kind of been, we've probably been a little bit of some of these all along the way. You know, there have been times when we've been one of these people. Or maybe we are now. We'll find out. So let me go, and she wrote it. It's very funny. You have to go read the article. We can't read everything she wrote, but it's very funny, the description she puts down. The first one is the know-it-all. The person has to give us their opinion, even when not asked, and they will make remarks like, you know, the reason your horse bucked you off is because, the reason your horse is tossing his head is because, and she goes on and on and on. But we've all known the know-it-all, and they are probably one of the most, I think they're one of the most annoying people in a boarding stable situation. And you, I know you've known them.
Okay, I'm gonna be real here. I'm going to think back to when I boarded at a stable, and I'm going to see how many of these I identify with. I was never a jerk about it, and I would let people ask me my opinion, but I always had an opinion. Okay, so
why can we guess that?
Yeah, I know you're shocked.
All the listeners are going, yeah. At least she's being honest.
I know that I would have had an opinion about things. I really wasn't a jerk about it because people would ask, and you know, when you go to when you boarded a boarding stable, you're kind of with a mix of people and a mix of horse experience. So you've got people that are just buying their first horse to people that probably have had a farm forever and are done owning a farm. So they've had horses for their whole life and they're in there too. And so boarding stables are great eclectic mixes of varying degrees of horse knowledge. So that being said, I'm going to see how many people I identify with, okay? I definitely know the know-it-all. I mean, the one jerk face that you don't want to talk to because they know everything. Like the Pirelli person at my last barn that because my horse wouldn't play soccer told me my horse has holes in his training because I don't do the 7 games of Pirelli with him. You know, like, and always had a comment when I was working a horse in the round pen would walk by, you're doing it wrong. You're not doing it. You have to ask for inside turns. You know, whatever I was doing was never right. And so definitely know the jerky know-it-all. So I don't identify with the the jerk face.
I think that every horse husband goes in their time, if they make it that long, goes through the know-it-all phase where they think they know it all and are telling their wives, who've been in horses for 25 years. I know I went through that phase, and I apologize, Jennifer. And then we get to the point after that phase where we just where we start to back off again when we realize we don't, we mature. And then we get to the phase where we just don't care anymore. So, I mean, there are phases. I should write an article for Horse Nation on the phases of horse husbandry. Of being a horse husband. I think horse husbandry is different.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was going to let it go. I wasn't going to be the know-it-all one, okay?
I was not allowed in the barn for a lot of time. So anyway, so there are phases that we go through. So I probably have been the know-it-all at one point is what I'm trying to say. The second one is the hoarder, and this is where her description is great. The owner has a collection of roughly 30 horses of every shape, size, color, and breed. She also has 12 sheep, 3 pigs, 10 turkeys, 2 geese, 5 dogs, 7 cats, 200 fish, and a Venus flytrap. and she doesn't actually ride her horses. And she's actually afraid of them. And that is true. I mean, we all know the horse owners who have a bunch of horses who are afraid of them. I mean, now you, Jamie, because you're not this person, because you're restricted by deed that you can't be. So I think that's probably one of the you're not afraid of your horses either.
I'm not afraid of my horses, and I feel like everything on my property needs to have a job. They're best behaved and they're happiest when they're doing something and they're working. So this is definitely not me. But this reminds me, it says she doesn't ride her horses. She's afraid of them, but feels like they would end up in the wrong hands if she were to sell them. None of them have seen the farrier vet or curry comb in 3 years. These are the ones that end up on the news. Yeah. The hoarder. These are the ones that end up. Somebody swooping in and going, we're taking all these from you. And then I adopt them later on at MASH.
That's right. That's right. Unfortunately. Uh-huh. That's right. The third one is the vet. And we've all known this person, better known as the walking WebMD of the barn. They are the first one to diagnose every horse sick or healthy. Your horse is looking colicky, and they say it's not colic, but a case of moon blindness caused by heart water, sweet feed, alfalfa, and your farrier. We have known those people, haven't we? Now, Jennifer does know a lot about horse health, and people would ask her, but she's always, and I'm always amazed because we'll see situations where I thought she should have spoken up, and she doesn't, you know, because she just realizes that you shouldn't. But I have seen cases where I'm going, why didn't you say something? She's like, they wouldn't have listened anyway. So, you know, we've all known this person, the vet.
Well, let's just go ahead and say that maybe I might have an opinion about horse health every now and then, too. And I will speak up if it is a case of the horse can't talk, so somebody has to be an advocate for the horse. I've seen so many times that horses or people have trouble. Horses have trouble and nobody does anything. Great example. And I'll tell you how it ended up so you can see how it was met. I was at that Texas barrel racing thing with my cousin. Remember, they call it a play day.
Yes.
And there was this girl. Oh my gosh, she was out there riding in the warm-up area, this horse that was so lame. And sometimes you have to be a voice for the voiceless. And she's riding this horse that is so, I mean, not just off every other step or whatever. I mean, every step the horse was limping. And I watch stuff like that, and I couldn't take it anymore. I had to be a voice for the voiceless. And I was like, excuse me. Yeah, hey. You, in the green, fluorescent green saddle pad. Come over here. She comes over. She's like, yeah, what's up? And I'm like, your horse, just so you know, did you know that he's lame? He's, like, really lame. Like, not just a little lame. He's lame, 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 lame. And at this point, she's like, no, he's not. And I'm like, yeah, he's limping. Your horse is visibly limping. I would put him at a grade 3 on a scale of 5. Your horse is lame. And I get mad, you know, I do, I can't help it. And she's like, okay, well, thanks. And she goes over and, like, talks to her group of girls and continues to gallop her horse around. So as good as I thought I was doing, not so much. So this is how the vet is met at events like this. Not so good. Not so good.
Well, you know, no, and they never are. So that means two out of the three Jamie has admitted to at this point. The fourth one is the backyarder. Now, there's a whole town developed around this in California. The person keeps their horse at home. They put up panels to section off the backyard. Half of the corral is a cinder block wall that encloses the quarter-acre home. Baler twine helps keep the corrals in tip-top shape. What is wrong with that, by the way? I don't see anything wrong with that. I think the author was stretching there a little because we have baler twine holding up some of our boards. They will occasionally muck the stalls.
Then you are the backyarder, okay? There's nothing wrong. You're saying there's nothing wrong with baling twine holding up fencing? Are you freaking kidding me?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. We tried duct tape, but it broke. So we had to go with the baler twine. It didn't break.
Oh,
it was stronger than the duct
gosh.
Tape.
Gosh. Jennifer, come on here for a second. I want an honest opinion of how cheap your husband is right now, because how do you feel about having baling twine tying up everything?
She's the one that suggested it. What are you talking about? She's cheaper than me.
You know something? The problem I'm having nowadays is baling twine here in Florida only comes in bright orange, and I find that upsetting because it really stands out in the fence line. The old days when you could get nice, natural sisal baler twine that kind of it would blend into the unpainted fence, it looked much nicer. And that's a little bothersome for me because it looks terrible out there with those big orange splotches of baler twine all over the place. Yeah.
Hey, it looks better than the duct tape did.
How is your HOA right now? Like, what are their rules?
They don't have any baler twine rules. As long as you
no
don't
baler
have
twine
those,
rules.
You're okay.
You just have to have a fence, and the fence is up thanks to the baler twine. Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay, so that is you guys. You identify with number four. Number five.
Oh, Mr. Natural Horsemanship. This is the owner who thinks it's cruel to put bits in horses' mouths and shoes in horses' feet. They use words like barbaric and torture and in any conversation regarding bits or shoes, but somehow they don't think it's cruel. I got to read the whole thing here. But somehow they don't think it's cruel for them to ride horses because we all know a snaffle bit and horseshoes are much more torturous than a 300-pound rider with a 50-pound saddle on barely a 900-pound horse. Don't even mention the spurs. Spurs are the mark of the devil. Spurs are actually made out of little microfibers from Lucifer's horns. Isn't that funny? All right,
yes,
safety. There's another one for you, Jamie. Safety first, Sally. Safety first, Sally is well-intentioned. She is also very adamant about the reason why any horse injury occurs is because someone forgot to wear their helmet. Broken toe? A helmet would have prevented that. Strained groin muscle? A helmet would have prevented that. And on and on and on. We're just going to give you that one. You don't even have to say a word.
That's not me.
All give you this one.
That is not me at all. Are you kidding me? Safety first, Sally. I'm the opposite of safety first, Sally. I'm like, I'll just lead him out to the pasture with a piece of baling twine around his neck. We'll be fine. No, that is definitely not me. Number seven is me and has been most of my life.
Miss Horse Poor. This is the owner that will sleep on a park bench, eat out of a dumpster, and bathe in a McDonald's bathroom so her horse doesn't have to go without. Have you bathed in a McDonald's bathroom? That's kind of gross to think about that. I know you've slept at the stall. I think any horse owner that's been around for a while and done shows has slept in the barn at the show. I don't know about eating out of the dumpster. I know you've eaten horse food before. You've probably eaten a horse treat or two when you had to.
I'm telling you what, there was a time in my late teens, early 20s when I was out on my own where I was like, you know what? I can eat ramen noodles again. I'll be okay. That's what you have to do. There was a time in my life, Glenn, where I had my horse at a nice boarding stable, and my father came to visit me, and he said, where's your refrigerator? And I said, well, the house that we rented didn't come with a refrigerator. And I said, but it's wintertime, and the milk will stay good for like 3 days outside. And he's like,
you know what? Isn't it so funny? Because when I met Jennifer, she was in that exact situation. Didn't have a refrigerator. Basically had to eat everything. She had a microwave only because she got one for Christmas. And that was it.
Yeah.
But she had a microwave, no refrigerator.
I actually would eat, yeah, Jennifer, the new just pasta noodles, but I couldn't afford the pasta sauce, so I ended up just buying little cans of tomato sauce, just plain tomato sauce, and I would put that on it. It kind of gave it the flavor.
Ketchup sandwiches? Did you ever do that one?
Oh, mustard sandwiches. Mustard.
There you go.
Yeah, I think Jennifer ate out of the McDonald's condiment display a few times. I think
Taco Bell, man, $59.79. That was their 59 cents, 79 cents, and 99 cents. I'd order from that menu all the time.
There you go.
You were never skinnier, were you?
How did we survive? How are we still here? Oh my God. God love us. We'll finish this list later.
We'll finish this a little later in the show. Let's get to our commercial for Back on Track, and then we're going to talk colicky stuff. This is where I tune out, and I'll be back later in the show.
Can't wait.
Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work, and what is the science behind them? Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
And I would like to welcome Dr. Aaron Venable from the College of Agricultural Sciences at Southern Illinois University. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Very glad to discuss horses with you this morning, and always glad to talk about ways that we can help keep our horses happier and healthier.
Absolutely. Now, just to get a picture of what you're dealing with right now, what is the weather like right now in Southern Illinois?
Well, it's about 40-ish degrees, and the sun is shining, so I can't complain. It could definitely be worse, but you know,
lovely.
In this part of the country, though, if you don't like the weather, just wait an hour and it'll be different. So we kind of take it day by day.
It could be snowing by the end of this conversation. You never know.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Now, you are the director of the equine program at the College of Ag Sciences. Give us a little bit of kind of who you are, a little background.
Sure. I came to SIU and joined the team here after spending many wonderful, wonderful years with the folks at Purina Animal Nutrition. And my years at Purina were fantastic, but they were also kind of frustrating in a way because there were so many questions that horse owners and veterinarians and managers had about colic and about nutrition and about ways that they wanted to fix problems related to their horse's performance, and we just didn't have the answers to those questions yet. And so one of the reasons why I was very glad to take the opportunity and join the team here at SIU was so that I would be able to do a little bit more research, a little bit more targeted towards kind of solving some of those problems that just we haven't been able to figure out yet in the equine community. And so very glad to have my years of experience at Purina to kind of guide me and helping to figure out what are the big problems that need to be solved and how can I get better information out there in the hands of the horse owners so we can do a better job taking care of our four-legged friends.
So you obviously study colic mainly as your kind of, I guess, is it like a thesis or something like that, or is it just your passion?
That's right. It's my passion, and my PhD research was focused on the difference in the horse's microbiome that takes place when they have a colic episode versus when your horse is healthy. And we see a real difference. We see a difference in the bacterial profile. But the problem is that there's so much we don't know about the horse's microbial environment in the gastrointestinal tract. So we just needed more information. And so armed with that knowledge, basically, of what we don't know, I was able to design a research program here at SIU that kind of aimed to answer some of those questions.
And this program that you've kind of invented, I guess, is it's called a sequel. You explain it.
Sure. I'm very glad to. So what we are utilizing is a surgical technique that's called cannulation. And cannulation is not new. It's a surgical technique that has been used in nutritional studies in virtually every species that we study nutrition in, and it's been used for decades and decades and decades. And the reason why it's so important to use in horses is because we need to know in real time what's going on in their gut, because the nutrition and the nutritional impact of dietary changes, of travel, of stress, of all of the different things that we try to manage in their lives, all of those things have an impact on their gut, specifically on their cecum. And a colic episode for a horse, as we all know, unfortunately, all too many times is fatal. And for a horse owner, it's an incredibly difficult, it's financially draining, it's emotionally draining, it's physically draining. And so if we can figure out what's going on in the gastrointestinal tract, then we can figure out ways to either prevent colic or facilitate a faster recovery from colic. And so by using these techniques, and cannulation is one of them, we can actually take samples directly out of their gastrointestinal tract. And that lets us know what's going on with the microorganisms, what's going on with different rates of digestion of different types of ingredients that we're feeding them. It lets us know exactly what we're impacting when we feed them a variety of different ingredients or different nutraceuticals or different probiotics or whatever we may be examining. So using this technique, this surgical technique, it gives us the opportunity to have a much more complete picture in terms of what's going on the inside of the horse versus just waiting to see if there are any symptoms that occur on the outside of the horse. Because as we all know, a lot of our horses are very stoic, and sometimes they may or may not be able to really kind of cue us in if there is, in fact, something that's changing or making them uncomfortable.
So what the article on Horse Talk says, that it says that a cecal cannulation procedure means the horse has a surgical portal through which researchers can access this section of the horse's gastrointestinal tract called the cecum, and that's the anterior portion of the large intestine. So my experience with the cecum is, so gosh, too many years ago, I don't even want to mention, I had a thoroughbred that had a full cecal bypass because he was colicking. I don't know if they do that anymore, or if that you're going to think of it, hear that and go, oh my gosh, it was terrible.
That's rather radical.
Yeah. Well, he ended up living several more years. Wow. Anyway, so the what I'm trying to visualize is, I know those Jersey cows that they put those little windows on the side, and you can reach your arm into the Jersey cow. Is that kind of what this is? How does this look on the outside?
It's exactly the same. It's the exact same procedure. It's just been done.
That was my contribution. I had to throw in the U at this point. I'm sorry. I had to.
It's the same procedure. It's just been done on a much smaller scale, obviously. We're not sticking our arms in there or anything like that. We the opening itself is about a 2-inch opening. And so the exterior portion of the fistula that has been fitted into the opening, there's an exterior kind of lip that holds it, you know, on the outside. But the opening itself, the rubber stopper, it's only about 2 inches. And so we can pull the stopper out, we can take samples out, and I completely understand your kind of emotional, oh my gosh, that just, you know, we don't like to think about doing that with horses. We don't like to think about using those kinds of techniques and those kinds of procedures with horses. And I really do understand where you're coming from. But the only other option to be able to answer these questions is to do terminal research. And I don't want to do that. I want to be able to answer. I want to be able to answer these questions using horses that are, you know, going to be pampered and taken care of and live a wonderful, wonderful life here. And they do. Believe
me. Dr. Venable, you got me wrong, because, and I'm sure our listeners are thinking that, but to me, those horses are ambassadors for the article says 920,000 horses that suffer colic every year, and those are the reported episodes of colic.
Exactly.
So we're looking at almost 1 million horses a year, and you've got 8 horses that have this procedure done that are living very well.
Yes, they are.
And so to me, they're ambassadors for the rest of us and our horses at home. You guys are trying to fix what all of us deal with, and our biggest fear as horse owners is colic. So I'm not angry at you for doing these procedures at all. I mean, my gosh, like you're helping, like these 8 horses are helping everybody's horses at home.
Well,
and you have
so
to understand, I get grossed out. I'm a horse husband. I get grossed out at any of this stuff. So, that's just...
Well,
so when you're talking about putting a cork in the side of a horse, like a bottle of wine, that's where I, you know, I just, that's why Jamie does it. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's, I don't guess any of the folks out there that actually work with the horses, we tend not to be a very squeamish group. You know, we get our hands dirty and we've all got boots that actually, you know, get used in the barn for real barn work. They're not just boots that we put on to go out. So, We're definitely all folks that, you know, we understand the reality, and I think the word that someone used best was, it's terrifying. I mean, that word colic, it kind of grips you with this paralysis, because you are so afraid that it's going to happen, and we're so limited by what we know. The risk factors seem to be all over the place, and we just can't quite wrap our arms around it, because it is so massive. And so I'm so glad to hear you say that you understand the incredibly important work that these 8 horses are doing for the rest of the horse population at large, because they are going to help us kind of unlock the mysteries and help us figure out ways to feed our horses better, to manage them better, to prevent colic, to help us figure out if we do have that colic episode, how do we help them recover faster? And so yeah, these 8 horses, they've definitely taken on a big job, but we're very excited to get to participate in that, and we're very excited at the information and the data that we're starting to get.
So what kind of stuff are you guys learning?
We actually have kind of a multitude of projects in the works. We've done a couple studies evaluating the impact of stress, and when we travel with our horses, we know that sometimes they go off feed, sometimes they go off water, sometimes, you know, they're obviously nervous and the environmental change impacts them, but we don't really know what impact that has on the microorganisms living in the gut. And so that was one of the very first studies that we conducted, and we're actually waiting on some of the final data to come back on that right now. So we're very excited to be able to see what the impact travel and the stress of travel has on the microorganisms in the gut.
Absolutely. I have a horse that traveled this past weekend, and when he goes somewhere, he doesn't eat. He gets so nervous that he just won't eat. And so I'm very interested in that data and how I can help him a little bit more, go, oh, this is what you need. You know, I put him on probiotics and biotic 8 from Omega Alpha, but whatever else I can do, my gosh, that'd be great information.
And see, that's where I guess I'm a little bit different than other researchers, and that's where my years at Purina really kind of helped to shape what I wanted to do when I came here to SIU, because I want to answer questions that are real-world questions. And I think that a lot of times that the disconnect that we have with researchers and veterinarians and horse owners is that horse owners feel like those people at the universities are studying stuff that's just so far away. It doesn't even have any real practical application for regular horse owner. But that's who I am. And that's who I spent so many years of my life working with and trying to find answers for. So if I can design studies that provide answers for those very real-world, everyday questions, then I'm doing some good. And my 8 horses that are standing out there doing this work, then they're doing some good. And that's all anybody wants. You know, we just want to take the best care of our horses that we can, and that's why I came to SIU, and that's why I'm doing the work that I'm doing.
Well, I think that's important to know that you're doing something that's real world, as opposed to when you read studies and you're like, really? That it's somebody just trying to get their PhD, and it's never going to help anybody ever. So that is fantastic. Fantastic work that you guys are doing, and I appreciate it. And it goes to show you, too, kind of how Purina, you know, Purina works really hard to make sure that their formulations work for the horses by employing vets like you. So I'm glad you wanted to go on and do a little bit more and find those answers. So I appreciate it. I hope you keep us up to date on everything that's going on and you solve the problem that all horse owners fear the worst.
Well, I will be glad to send you updates and let you know when we make our big discoveries.
Fantastic. And give all those horses, if they're allowed to have them, a carrot from all of us.
Will do. You guys have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Venable.
Thank you,
Doctor. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
I didn't get her website, but you can probably Google her. You can also find the article on horsetalk.nz. So it's... I hope we didn't gross you out too much, Glenn. It wasn't too gross.
You know, the whole cork in the side. That's where I was fine till the cork in the side. But we've had horses die of colic too. So you know, we've been down that road. And anything we can do, it is the one that it doesn't segregate. You know, types of horses, status of horses. You know, rich people, poor people who have horses. It doesn't matter. This is one that doesn't segregate. So, whatever she can do to figure that out. And you know, I think she must have gotten some crap about doing the research. You know, doing this kind of research on actual horses, which is why she got a little defensive there. But you know, we all understand that, and we all understand that it has to be done. If she isn't doing this, we're just going to have thousands more die. So, and boy,
again,
it is tough,
you know, I worked at the Gluck Equine Research Center when I was in college, and there were several studies that I was a part of that were very useful. Like, I was when the time where people were putting sponges up racehorses' nostrils, and they were developing like a breathing apparatus to figure out before the race who, you know, if something like this was going on. And then there was other studies I was like, this is a waste of these horses' lives. But the other ones, I was like, wow, these guys are ambassadors for the future horses that they're helping. So you kind of have to look at it and on a case-by-case basis. And I think that this is a problem that she's answering questions for. I think it's great.
Well, let's take a break for Equestrian Collections and our song today by Jared Rogerson. We'll be back. We have the European Report coming with Horse and Country TV. Victoria will be with us in just a few minutes. Hi, Glenn here, and I'm back with Debbie from Equestrian Collections. And Debbie, this week we're going to talk a little bit about shipping, aren't we?
Shipping, yes, the biggest thing in online for our customers, online shopping. I wanted to let everybody know that they probably noticed throughout online shopping that shipping rates have gone up, and that's because the big shippers, UPS and FedEx, have changed the way that they charge for shipping. It's no longer done only by weight. It's done by box size as well as weight. And so shipping is going to go up for customers in all online shopping. At Equestrian Collections, what we have to help you out with that is our premium shipping program. If you go onto our site, on the homepage, you will see a line that says our premium shipping program. We have two available. We have one-way shipping for $39.95, a one-time charge. You have free shipping to domestic addresses, that is United States addresses, for one solid year. You only have to pay $40. And you get free shipping for a whole year, and that includes Christmas. And then if for our two-way shipping, and that would mean that you not only have outgoing shipping free, but if you need to return something, you have return shipping for free, and that is for $59.95. That's a total of $60 for free outgoing and incoming shipping for a solid year. There are lots of other good ideas, little perks and stuff of this program that you can read about on our website, www.equestriancollections.com, and just click on the banner on the homepage that will take you to our premium shipping program. It's going to save customers a ton of money, which is why I wanted everybody to hear about it first thing in January.
Very good, Debbie. It's similar to the Amazon Prime program, and only cheaper.
Yes, we actually, yes, that's exactly right. We wanted our customers to have the same sort of perks that they can have if they shop on Amazon.
Very good. Well, thank you, Debbie. And, of course, you can find out more about this and all the great products that are available if you get that shipping program at EquestrianCollections.com.
Time and strangers keep passing you by. Don't you know there's a place you can go to? Heaven's just beneath the Wyoming sky, and there's honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels, storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead down to blue water, it just might change that broke down look in your eyes. You've been beat down, busted and broken, you've fallen on some real hard days. If you listen to the words I have spoken, won't even have to pass away. There's honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels, storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead you down to blue water, it just might change that broke down look in your eyes.
honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels. Storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead you down to blue water. It just might change that broke down look in your eyes. Honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels. Storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead you down to blue water. It just might change that broke down look in your eyes.
Honky Tonk Halos by Jared Rogerson. And if you guys don't have his CD Dirt, you got to get it. It's so good. It's so good. You can find his stuff at jaredrogerson.com. He's on CD Baby. I believe it's on iTunes too. So there you go. Jared Rogerson, Honky Tonk Halos. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Back on Track Products. And Glenn, I just wanted to say thank you. I just wanted to say thank you so much. I know that, you know, sometimes it's been a bit of a struggle coming up with money after starting the Horse Radio Network, and I'm glad that you finally hit it, hit the lottery so you could buy me the item that I could never buy myself. And that is, if you recall, the Seabiscuit saddle that I was asking you to purchase for me. It was a race-worn saddle from
the Red Pollard one. Yes.
Yes, Red Pollard's race-worn saddle. They're saying that it was the saddle that he rode, I believe, the match race in. So we're talking awesome. Actually, Red Pollard didn't ride in the match race. The shoes. There were shoes. I'll get to it. So anyway, thank you for spending $104,260 at the auction for the saddle for me.
You're worth it, Jamie. You're worth it.
I know. I'm expecting the UPS truck to drive up any minute, so I keep looking out the window. So if I sound distracted, that's what the problem is.
You know, if I were you, I'd go sit on the porch and wait. I would.
I love it. You know what else? Red Pollard Seabiscuit saddle sold for $104,000. The Seabiscuit race-worn horseshoes from this one I was getting confused. The War Admiral match race at the Santa Anita Handicap. $35,000 for a pair of shoes that Seabiscuit wore. I don't know how they know. I mean, there must be a way that you are officially sure that this was Red Pollard saddle. These were the shoes that he wore during that race. But the auction ended. It was on Leland's.com, the Seabiscuit collection of Chris Lowe. And Chris and his wife, we read a lot about a couple weeks ago, and they had this huge collection of Seabiscuit memorabilia they just decided to sell. And oh my gosh, there was a 1938 Seabiscuit versus War Admiral program. $10,000.
Whoa.
Collection of
programs.
Yeah, $700. A picture that somebody painted back in the day, it's super old, back in the 40s, I guess. The Admiral versus the Biscuit by Jeffrey Smith. $6,000. They were not hurting for money at the end of this. A Seabiscuit signed photograph. I'm sure it's not signed by the Biscuit himself. Maybe it is. I don't know. But that went for $4,800.
Wow. The saddle went for $104,000. We talked about this when the auction first started. It was at $3,000, and we thought maybe it'd get to $10,000.
I cannot believe it went for $100,000. It's amazing. Just a prop from the Seabiscuit, the movie, which I'm sure the Seabiscuit, the movie, the one that happened in the 40s, not this most recent one, went for almost $500. There was a Seabiscuit hand-painted plate that Charles Howard owned, $600. Portraits of Seabiscuit, Santa Anita Handicap photo collages, went for almost $2,000. Charles Howard Seabiscuit Christmas cards I guess Charles Howard sent out, those went for $300. There was nothing cheap on any of this. Nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. People have more money than we do, I guess. I mean, that's well, now, if you had had $104,000, would you have bought this saddle?
Glenn, it's fun to dream, but absolutely not. Must be out of your mind. I'd be on a plane to Spain right now, and I'd be picking
exactly.
out that Andalusian that I keep finding online.
See, you'd be buying a brand new saddle and a new horse is what you'd be buying. That's right.
I'm looking at all the different auctions that they have, and they have all sorts of different sports memorabilia auctions. And there's a scrapbook of Shoeless Joe Jackson, you know, Shoeless Joe from the movie Field of Dreams. Everybody knows the story. That went for $34,000. What Woo. Are you talking about?
That's a lot. Well, I got to tell you, they're, you know, we talk about riding and how, you know, every horse husband gets dragged into riding, you know, with their wife at some point or another, whether you want to or not. And that is also true for politicians. Governor Terry McAuliffe of Virginia was on a trip to visit his daughter, who works for a nonprofit in Africa, in Tanzania, around Christmas time. So he and his wife, and they head out to go visit the daughter. Well, the daughter thought it'd be a great idea to do one of those safari rides. And as a matter of fact, she said, it's fair to say that my father's favorite choice of activities is not horseback riding. Well, it is. I can tell you that it's definitely not his favorite now, because while he was there riding, he got tossed and broke 7 ribs on his holiday trip to Africa.
No.
Yes. So apparently he was healed and he came home. Well, they had to cart him off the hospital the other day again. He was out doing a public appearance of some sort, and they ended up taking him to the hospital for a couple days because he had developed fluid around his lungs from this accident. So I got to say that this is one particular guy that when his daughter says, let's go for a trail ride, is not going to be doing it ever again.
No, definitely not.
It always sucks.
I mean, how many,
when you take somebody up for the first time and they fall off and hurt themselves. Don't you feel guilty? Because it's happened to all of us.
Well, yeah, and there's always people that go, oh, my God, I've always wanted to ride a horse. Can I come over and ride sometime? I always go, absolutely. Sure you can, because they're not actually going to come, because I'm not actually going to be available, because I don't want you to fall off and hurt yourself for the first time.
Exactly.
And have it on my sure, absolutely, cool, are you around Saturday? Ooh, that's not good. Saturday's not good. Another news story for you, Karen O'Connor, Olympian extraordinaire, married to David O'Connor, who is now the coach for the U.S. team, the chef de keep or whatever they call it. Chef to keep. Because he was doing all that work, Karen O'Connor had to kind of step out of the light of eventing. And I've been wondering where she was, because remember, she broke her back and been kind of quiet on the Karen O'Connor front. Well, that's apparently because she had to, because they worry about and she said, I had to stand down from all involvements on committees to prevent any perceived conflicts of interest. Well, now she had to start looking around at other countries, and she is now officially the eventing coach for Mexico. Mexican eventing. She's the coach. How cool is that?
I wonder, you know, you hear about these riders all the time who end up coaching foreign teams, and I wonder how much that – does it pay well, do you think?
I don't know. It depends on
nothing
how excited Mexico is about
well.
It.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, nothing pays well, that's right.
It's just no.
But, you know, it's probably a prestige thing, you know, when you're the coach of a foreign team. You know, we've talked to we had many people on the show who coached foreign teams, and I always wondered about that.
I would imagine
there,
that it depends.
You won't be bored.
It depends on how excited the country is about the sport of eventing. You know, if they really want to back it, I mean, they hired Karen O'Connor. They probably got some money involved in it. You know, it is a national thing. But if they really don't care about it, there's probably not much money involved. So who knows?
Right. Right. Yep. You're right. Let me see here. I had another story here. Old Friends is, Old Friends is just going crazy. And we've talked about Old Friends before. They're the group that takes retired racehorses and gives them a nice cushy life there in Kentucky and New York and different places, and they have hundreds of horses now, and he's done a great job raising money and being able to give them all a retirement that every horse wishes they had, that we wish we had. They have announced a partnership now with Kentucky Downs to establish a satellite facility at the Kentucky racetrack. Kentucky Downs is one of the lower level racetracks in Kentucky, in northern Kentucky near Cincinnati. And they're expected to launch in May of 2015, and the track will be open to the public for the summer season. It's an exhibit that will showcase 10 retired racehorses, including those with a history of running at Kentucky Downs. They'll have public tours coordinated by the Simpson County Tourism Commission. In addition, a joining visitor center and an old friend's gift shop will be housed in a newly renovated structure at the track's stable area. So it's kind of a cool collaboration where people will get to go see, retired racehorses, and will raise awareness for making sure they all get jobs after. And I think anything you can do at these lower tracks to encourage that is certainly a wonderful idea.
Absolutely. And Michael Blowen, who's the founder and president of Old Friends, he really gets it. His quote is, "This exhibit will offer the fans a way to maintain emotional ties to the horses, basically that they've loved and watched race." And I think it is so important to bring the aftercare aspect to these lower tracks. There's a pretty low track here in Phoenix, and I remember going up there and seeing a horse that had raced 100 times. And he's still running at these low tracks. And, if I was Michael Blowen, I would have walked up and said, "I will take your horse and I will retire him at Old Friends." Obviously, I don't have that power. That's the kind of horse that they retire at Old Friends. I think it's great. Even Silver Charm, who, isn't that where Silver Charm went to Old Friends?
Silver Charm. Yep. Yep.
Was a horse that went to Japan to be a stallion. And when his career was over in Japan, as opposed to have what happened to Ferdinand, which is in Japan, go to the slaughterhouse, they actually brought him home. And that's no easy feat, to ship a stallion across the country, across the world, really. No easy or cheap feat. And they brought Silver Charm home. And I think it's just fantastic what they do. That's such a great organization.
Jennifer, I assume no Victoria. So you haven't heard back from her at this point? She got tied up?
Not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
Well, then we could finish our 10. We started finish this earlier it. In the show, if you missed it. The 10 different types of horse owners. This was written by Maria Wachter, and it was on Horse Collaborative. And we got up to number 7. So number 8, and we've determined that between us and Jamie, we've been these people in many cases. So I don't know what that says about us. Number eight is Frugal Fred. Now, this is my wife, Jennifer. This is not me.
Really?
Frugal Fred is always looking for a way to save a buck. He is self-taught farrier and only lamed up every horse he's ever owned. He will take a tube of Wormer and divide it between three horses and say to himself, "A little Wormer is better than no Wormer." I love this one. He will sneak his horses over to the local golf course so they can get free meals. Everybody's wanted to do that. But Jennifer is the frugal one in our relationship. I am not. I am the one that spends money. She is the one that saves money any chance she can get. So she fits in a little bit to number 8, I think. Yeah.
Really?
I don't think she's ever done the Wormer thing because she realizes that's important. But
Within reason. This is the most ridiculous of every example, but I didn't really bathe in a McDonald's, so, you have to look at it as a blanket statement. But the next one, I think as a youth growing up, we all know this girl. I was definitely not this girl, but this girl was my friend, Sammy. Bless her heart. The show-getter. the show-getter. Show-getter is the go-getter of the show world. She only smiles if the judges are looking. If she's not winning blue ribbons every weekend, you're talking her out of jumping off a bridge. She will stop at nothing if blue ribbons are on the line. She will occasionally ask to borrow your trail horse to help her unwind and get back to nature because she can't afford for her $90,000 show horse to get injured on the trail. He's too good for trail riding anyways. My friend Sammy, oh my gosh, she was my barn friend, and she's the one whose mom took me out to the hunter shows, you know, and it was like I was the ghetto rider while she was the show getter. And I remember going to her house, and she had all these ribbons strung up around her bedroom, and they were all blue. And I thought, oh my gosh, how on earth do you have all these blue ribbons? She was like, well, we throw away any other color.
I knew it.
We throw away any other color. So it just, you know, only display the blue ribbons. I'm like, you should see my collection of brown. It's pretty impressive.
The show getter. I always wondered what happened to them when they grow up, you know, and they become adults. Where do they end up? Do you know where she ended up?
I do know where she ended up because please don't look her up. She's Sammy and I are friends on Facebook, and she married a very wealthy man and does jumpers in Wellington. So the show getter paid off.
Paid off in her case.
It did. But I got to tell you, you know, Chad, my husband, loves to golf. He loves to golf, and he goes to these golf tournaments all the time. And this is just like the horse chick mentality coming into a play here. Is he goes to the golf tournament. I'm like, how? He comes home, and he's like, I'm like, how did you do? He's like, well, we came in third as a team. And I was like, you didn't get a ribbon? You don't get ribbons? He's like, only horse girls would want a ribbon for playing golf. Like, it doesn't count if you didn't get a ribbon. It's like you weren't there. You have to get a ribbon. It's like, yeah, dudes don't want ribbons after golf. I'm like, it makes sense to me. I feel like we need to give out ribbons for golfing.
I played in the tournaments, they used to give out golf, you know, like 12 packs of golf balls, and they'd always have something stamped on them, like you're the winner, you know, third place or whatever. So they used to give out golf balls, and I had this friend that played in all kinds of tournaments, and he must have had 1,000 golf balls. Because he just kept, that's what they gave out. They would give out 12 golf balls to the winners. So tell him he's playing in really cheap tournaments that they're not even giving out golf balls. I mean, that's
They
bad.
Give out stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but,
cows,
I mean, it
cows,
doesn't
they
count.
They
don't
have about
1,000
cows. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's got 1,000 clip-on towels. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, he needs a towel.
Do you
it's
take
Arizona.
Them out to the barn and use them, and then he gets mad at you? The golf towel.
Glenn, we don't need to bring that up right now because it's a sensitive subject. They're tack cleaning towels. They're perfect. They clip right onto the little thing that hangs
exactly.
down my bridle rack. It's perfect. I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah, horse towels don't come with little clip-on things like little golf towels do. Golf towels are always so, they're like soft, too. I don't know what they make them out of. The golf towels seem to be soft.
They're tack towels, Glenn.
10. Yes, that's right. Number 10, the significant other. I think I can relate to this one. I'll read this one to you. The significant other is normally the husband. Once he realizes his wife is having an affair with a 16-hand, 1,200-pound chestnut beast, he decides the only way to win her back is to get a beast of his own. He faithfully goes with his wife and their ponies everywhere, trying his best to find joy in the situation. He still can't figure out how to post. Diagonals and leads are foreign language to him, but he tries his best. Sitting home watching NASCAR on a Sunday is no comparison to a nice romp in the woods. Chafed butt and bruised balls be damned. He can't understand why his wife couldn't be happy owning a pair of pet hamsters instead of an animal that tries to kill him on a regular basis. The significant other. I admit I am number 10. I live it. Now, at one point, more horses than Jennifer did. So, I mean, I don't know.
Well, but you got to admit, too, at least you don't have the chafed butt and the bruised balls because you drive. So it's,
I drive.
You,
nice squishy
you figured
seat.
Out an easier way. You figured out
the
lazy
squishy
man's
seat.
Way.
You bet. I did. I admit it. And, you know, you all should try it because those cushy seats on the carriages are really nice. I'm just saying. And we got springs. We have springs, too. You don't have springs. I mean, you have springs. But they're not quite the same at a, you know, a sit-in trot.
All right, so to run down the list, this is the list of the 10 different types of horse owners. Know-it-all, the hoarder, the vet, the backyarder, Mr. Natural Horsemanship, which is a picture is hilarious that they put up, Safety First Sally, Miss Horsepoor, Frugal Fred, the Show Getter, and the Significant Other. Gosh, every time I look at the picture of that little girl, the Show Getter, all I do is think it's about Sammy. It looks just like her.
Well, we're heading to Wellington here in a couple of weeks. I'll say hi for you, okay? I'll stop by.
Notice I gave no last name.
I'll say hi for you.
She did well for you.
The Horse and Hound did another one of their things. They've done this before. They did another one of their things, the 44 horsey things you should do before you die, your bucket list horsey stuff. And I was looking down through the list at how many between Jennifer and I knew how many of these we've done. And we've done a lot. I was surprised at the number of things we've done on this list. We'll just go down through them quickly. Watch the Grand National in person. That's a British thing, and probably not so much on the American list. Watch Rolex would be, you know, or something like that would be.
Derby.
Kentucky Derby.
The Derby.
Yeah. Something like that would be our comparable. Swim with your horse in the sea. I know Jennifer's done that. Have you done that?
I have done that. It's awesome.
See? Okay. You guys have done that. How about fall off in a water jump? Have you done that, James?
Glenn, I'd like to say the closest I have ever come to falling off in the water jump was 3 days ago. And it was very close.
Jennifer,
I mean,
have you
really
ever fallen
close.
Off in the water jump?
I have fallen off, but not in the water jump. Oh, my gosh, we got to do it.
There you go. You both have to do that one.
Yeah, let's get together and do that.
So, yeah, I mean, you know what, too? You got the airbags now, so you know you won't sink. You'll float. It'll be fine. You won't drown.
We'll be pinned face down because we can't move our arms.
I thought about that when if you fall in a water jump. I wonder if that would happen with the air vest. I wonder if they did that as part of the, you know, when they designed these things. I wonder if they had to throw people in water and see what would happen as part of the testing. We'll roll you over if it takes too long. Number four, ride out for a racehorse trainer. Well, you did that for a living for a while.
I did. I have done that.
Yeah, so that maybe that one's on your list. Ride side saddle. Jennifer's done that one. She's ridden side saddle several times.
Never.
Yeah, I think you'd like that. You'd have to find a side saddle for girls with short legs.
I'd have to find girls with legs.
Yeah, your knee would be in the wrong place for the little bar there thing. Does that have a name, Jennifer, a little part that sticks up, you wrap your leg around?
I have no idea.
Did you like riding side saddle though, didn't you? You liked it.
It was one of those things. Nice, New York City, nice place to visit, but wouldn't want to live there. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Well said.
Go on a horseback safari. Well, I know one governor of a certain state of Virginia that'll never do that again. But that has to be on every girl's bucket list, right? I mean, every horseback rider's bucket list. I think I would even want to ride at a safari. I think I'd even ride then. I'd do that.
Yeah.
How about go cross-country schooling with an elite event rider? We've done that. So, that you know, we've all done that. Fence judge for the day. Jennifer and I have done that. Have you done it? You've done that, I think, too.
I have at the championships, the AACs.
And the next one was a purely British thing. Join up with your horse. Of course, that's the Monty thing. We've all done that in one form or another. How about number 12, have a driving lesson without the car? And, of course, Jennifer and I have done that. Have you done have you driven before?
The only horse I ever drove was the horse we drove in Norco. So, no, I've never really driven.
Huh. Well, I'll have to get you into that. If you ever come out to the barn again.
When I did it in Norco, she gave me the reins for all of 12 seconds, which I don't blame her.
Well, you know what? When you come out and visit us here in Florida, I'll let you drive a bolting Hackney. It'll be perfect. Perfect way to learn.
Well, I can run faster than him probably, but sure.
How about ride flying changes? You guys have done that unintentionally, if not intentionally.
I've done it. Every person's ridden a flying change.
Yeah. I mean, so that I didn't know why that one was on the list. Raining.
They didn't put that in there right, Glenn. It needs to be tell a horse to successfully do flying changes. That's different
flying
than riding
changes,
a flying
yeah.
change. Oh, that is for different. Yeah, and I haven't done that. Just kidding.
For more than one step. Try reining. You tried reining when you were in Texas, right?
Yeah, they didn't. I more did the barrel racing thing. I didn't really get to rain. So that's still on my list.
Your sliding stops were accidental. Is that it?
The sliding stop came at the second barrel, and he wouldn't go any further.
I will do one more, two more. We're waiting. Victoria's just now getting to call in. So let's see here. Go hunting in Ireland. Jennifer's always wanted to do that. She would love to go hunting in Ireland. Three-day event. You've both ridden in the three-day event, so that's pretty easy. Ride your horse from coast to coast. That is not something that even in a carriage I want to do. I want hotels and a nice, squishy car that goes 60 miles an hour. Thank you very much. I have no idea.
Really?
Come
on.
I'm not brave. All right, let's head off of Horse and Hound here and to Horse and Country TV because we have a Victoria Spicer joining us. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, how are you?
Thought you weren't going to make it there for a minute. Is everything okay there in England?
Yes, indeed. I had a minor emergency, but all sorted now.
Okay, good. I just hope it's not a horse emergency.
No, a video, a technology, as always.
Oh, a technology emergency. All right, well, that's okay. we're glad to have you on. Of course, Victoria does our European report with us every week on Wednesdays. Victoria, what are we talking about today?
Well, it seems quite a long way away at the moment, being freezing cold and half the country's covered in snow, but it's not going to be long until badminton. And we've had a sort of a sneak little insight into what's coming up in the course, because obviously last year there was quite a lot of controversy. It was quite a difficult new course by the new designer. And this year it's his second attempt, and they always alternate direction at badminton every year. So we're quite excited to see what he's going to produce, and is it going to be as taxing as last year?
Can you tell us the name of the new designer?
I can. It's Giuseppe. I'm not Giuseppe Diacello or something like that. Yeah, it's he's Italian, and it's quite difficult. But I have to say, last year's badminton was a classic, and it was nice to see big, bold cross-country horses finishing on top instead of it all becoming just a dressage and show jumping competition. But because the weather was so bad, it just made it a little bit too difficult, and there wasn't as many finishers as they wanted. So hopefully this year we'll get nice weather, no flooding, no snow, and we'll be able to see what this course designer can do.
I know Lucinda said last year, you have a quote in here that I thought was funny, Lucinda Green. She said of last year's track, an old-fashioned badminton with modern skin-tight jeans on.
Lucinda's brilliant, isn't she? And it is true. I mean, eventing at four-star level has become so much more about technicality. And if you look back, you know, 20 or 30 years, it was all about huge, big rider frightener fences that the horses actually found increasingly easy to jump, and so they had to make it much more technical, and he was kind of harking back that little bit to get some of the big huge fences in, but also to have a few of the skinnies and questions that we see more and more in modern eventing.
Are we seeing them try and go back a little bit that way here, Jamie, do you know?
Gosh, I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I one would hope so, but I think they seem to just get more technical, it seems.
Yeah.
And technical is obviously so challenging for the horses and the riders, but if you're just an average person, and especially if you're not hugely into horse sport, you don't really understand that kind of twisting line where they have to come back and sit in 2.5 strides and is really difficult to achieve. You want to go mm-hmm. and stand next to a fence and look up and think, gosh, how on earth does anyone ever be brave enough to jump over this?
Right. And they used to put them on the sides of hills and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff, too. You know, they were kind of nuts with where they put them, too. The other thing is, you guys, you know, we always talk about the weather here in the United States, and it always seems in the United States there's hurricanes or tornadoes or blizzards or something going on. But you had your own version of Wizard of Oz over there.
We did, rather. And this is my lady I know, a really nice lady who trains around the Southeast. And she put on last week that she'd come down to the yard and found that her horse's stable was 5 meters away from where she'd left it. And it's quite a scary story because the horse had been in the stable. And she said that, Janine said that there's been worse storms and worse winds and they've never had a problem. But there was obviously something about the wind that night just caught the stable at the wrong angle and lifted it up and blew it away. And so her poor mare was found in her stable rug, soaking wet and freezing cold.
You guys have the most, you know, I think it's, you know, some of the worst weather. You always are having rain. It just seems like British people are always bitching about the weather. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that is very true. And I guess what's different, and I, you know, I've done a couple of trips in America where 1 minute I'm roasting in Miami and the next minute is that freezing cold just an hour up north or something. So, like, you get more kind of variation. Whereas in Britain, we genuinely just do get really grim winters, quite nice springs and autumns, and occasionally we get a good summer. And we don't get any kind of drama. We don't get any kind of roasting hot temperatures or hurricanes or tornadoes. I think a windy night that caused the stable to blow away is about as worse as it gets.
Well, you
so
can
we
feel for
stop owning.
So I don't know. I think I'll take ours. At least we get the nice, really nice days in between. You know,
yeah.
So in between the tornado that blows your house down, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
what more could you ask for?
Right, exactly. Now you also have one of your masterclass videos on there.
Yes, we do. And this one is by a young show jumper called Harriet Nuttall. And she demonstrates basically how to become a bit faster in the jump off. And this is her top horse. And it's quite amazing to see because he really does land and is already turning and moving as soon as he lands from a fence. So if you want to know how the professionals do it and how they shave seconds off their jumping time, go and have a look at this video.
Now, I also did notice when I was on horseandcountry.tv and on the homepage, one of the things coming up on today's show is fly fishing with Hywel Morgan. What's that have to do with horses, by the way? I just thought I'd
ask. When Horse and Country was first formed, it was obviously they wanted to make enough of the country name. And so we had lots of programs about the countryside and fishing and farming and things like that. And now the great majority of our programs are equestrian because that's the most popular. But we do still have some fishing and we have a regular farming show and we have things like dog showing, which is pretty popular. So I'd say it's kind of 80% horses, but you do get a bit of a mix of things as well in our channel.
You know, I kind of picture you out there in your Dewberry boots with your fly fishing rod in the stream.
I do have Dewberry boots, it's true. My dad was a keen angler, and I think he taught me when I was little, and I tried it again about 10 years ago, and when the fish came towards me, I squealed and ran away. So he obviously taught me badly, and I didn't pick up that from interest from him, I'm afraid. And not very interested in fishing, I'm afraid.
And then you had one more in your gallery series. We've talked about this before, where you asked people to submit pictures. And I have to submit my pony to this one, by the way. I need to get it in because we have this little swampy area. We live in Florida. So in the back of this paddock is a little swampy area. It's the only place we actually have mud. And he sees the fit to roll in it every day. And he has some incredible rolls. And he is so good at getting his face ground in. You know, some of them aren't so good at getting their faces ground in. He is an expert at getting his face ground in. I'll have to send a picture.
Please do. And I have to ask, is he a gray pony?
No, he's more of a bay pony, but he's gray. Right now he's gray, yeah.
Because if you look at our gallery, Muddy Marbles, more than half of the pictures uploaded have been grey horses and ponies, and I can't decide whether it's just that grey ponies like to get dirty or whether it's their owners who are just more upset to have a grey horse and find them as filthy as they are. But there's definitely more greys than there are bays and everything else. There's even, yeah, do you have a look? Because there's one called Stanley the Mud Monster, who is a piebald or a paint horse or whatever you guys would say. And the black parts of him don't look that dirty and the white parts look filthy. So there's something mysterious going on.
Well, this is great. You can find it all at horseandcountry.tv. We're glad you made it. We missed you last week, so we're glad you were back to join us again this week, and we appreciate you stopping by even in the midst of your technical emergency.
No problem. It's lovely to chat to you both.
Thanks, Victoria. You take care.
Thanks, Victoria.
Bye.
I'm glad we get to talk to her. We got to hear her accent at least once a week.
I missed her. I really did. It's like it just hasn't been
fun.
The same.
She is. She brings something bubbly and a lot of fun to the show, and we really appreciate her stopping by every single week. Well, thank you everybody for joining us. We really appreciate it. How many of those list we went over were you, if you're honest with yourself? Well, if you want to find that, you can just go to Horse Collect. I always get
this
wrong.
We'll post
a
link to it. We'll post a link to it, and then you guys have to write on there which ones you are. That's going to be it.
That's a good idea. All right, good. We'll do that. And, of course, we'll be back tomorrow with the NATRC. That's N-A-T-Y. What is it again? The NATRC. I was right the first time. The NATRC, which, of course, is the Trail Ride Conference. They will be here talking about trail riding tomorrow. And then Friday we'll be back. Get your really bad ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put really bad ads in the subject line and copy and paste the entire ad into the email. And we'll be reading those off on Friday. We have some great prizes. I think, actually, we have some DVDs to give away. I'll tell you exactly which one. Maybe this will motivate people. It is going to be a DVD by Wendy Murdoch called Better Riding in 5 Minutes a Day. So that'll be the prize. And, of course, Equity is giving away a manure fork at the end of every month. And we'll be doing a flex and fork for the monthly people who submit. Everybody who submits will be thrown in the pile. And whether you win or not, your name will be put in the pile to win a flex and fork worth $80. And then at the end of the year, all the names from all the different people that submit all year long will be put in to win one of the super-duper shaken forks worth almost $300. So that'll happen. Hey, baby Luke.
Hey, he just came in.
Baby Luke is still sounding like a baby. Is he talking?
He says the magical words like Zinni and Danny and no. So...
Is he saying mama yet or mommy or some version of that yet?
He says mama. It's more of a command than it is a hello. It's more of a mama. But it's okay. He's learning. But he says the dog's name, which was his first word, which is still his favorite word.
It just reminds me of the show with the dinosaurs there. Not the mama. Not the mama. did you ever see that one?
I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds I love it. There's that Family Guy episode where Stewie, the baby, is standing right at the foot of the bed, and he's going, mama, 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 mom, mom, mom. And I always thought that was ridiculous until you realize, no, that's totally true. That really happens. Like, all they do is stare at you and go, mama, mom, mom. You're like, what? I'm right here.
Well, thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern here on Horses in the Morning.
Bye, Nerd Gal. You guys have a great day.